Isaac Backus, John Ganot, who baptized George Washington in the Potomac River, these different ones of history that were Baptist. And this evening we come to John Leland. John Leland is a very special person, not only in our Baptist church history, but also in our national history. We could say to a certain extent that without John Leland, there would not be the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. Because he was really the one that pushed James Madison to get that put in there. And we'll talk about it. Let's begin at the beginning. John Leland, 1754 to 1841. Again, remember what time of history we're in. The colonists were here. 1754 is before the Declaration of Independence, before the war against England for independence. So he was born in May 14th, 1754 in Grafton, Massachusetts. Massachusetts was the hotbed for the Congregational Church. If you lived in Massachusetts, if you were a member of a church, it was the Congregational Church. If you met out in private, like we saw some of the others did, Obadiah Holmes, you got whipped and beat for it. You got thrown in prison. Your goods were confiscated for not being a member of the Congregational Church. So this is where John Leland grew up, and he was so much prone to learning. He was such an intellectual, so to speak, that his father's minister, and his father was a Congregationalist, so the father's minister wanted him to be a minister. I read the story, and again, we can't put everything in this short synopsis, and then plus the time's sake, I've got to keep it short. But I read the story about how John Leland is a teenager. The Congregationalist minister was in his home, and he gave a short sermon to people that were there, and he completely used the text of Scripture wrong. He didn't teach what the Bible was saying. He read a verse and then taught what he thought about it, and it was completely off base. And at the end of his message, he said, "Does anybody have any comments about what I preached on?" And John Leland, being a teenager, thought, well, I'd be out of place to say anything because of my age, and it would be a lack of respect, so I won't say anything. And the guy kept about three or four times finally said it, and so John Leland said, "That must be the Lord giving me this opportunity." So he politely gave what he believed the text meant. And the Congregationalist minister was so impressed by it that he said, "You know, I think I'll have to go read that again and think it through because you might be right." And so here at a young age, he showed the ability to discern the Scriptures and to teach. And so that minister wanted him to become a Congregationalist minister, of course, because of his aptitude for it. But there was also the town physician who wanted him to be a physician. But he himself, John Leland, wanted to study law. Wanted to study law and become a lawyer, but that was soon to change. The thing that changed that was his conversion at the age of 19. He received Jesus Christ as his Savior. Nothing like the Lord to change your plans and change your direction. I think it's sad the day we live in that we make our plans without the Lord. You know, we say, what are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do after school? What are you going to do for college? We're going to do what we want to do. We've never thought, well, I'm going to offer myself to God first. And then if he doesn't want to use me full time, then I'll do something else. And here's a man that had plans. He could have been this, he could have been that, but he wanted to study law. But when he got converted at age 19 and baptized by immersion on June 1st, 1774 by Noah Alden, his plans were changed. And Noah Alden, by the way, had been baptized 25 years earlier by Shubal Stearns. And if you remember last week or week before study, Shubal Stearns and the New Lights down in North Carolina were the foundation of a Baptist movement that started down there. So this man, as a result of that ministry, came up and baptized John Leland. What a great heritage. What a great result that Shubal Stearns was grandfathering people in. The people he baptized were now baptizing other folks. You're going to see as we go through this, especially some of these other missionaries, they didn't count their conversions by those that made professions of faith. Now, we know that conversion is a profession of faith. Baptism is not a conversion. And a lot of folks, when you ask them, when did you get saved? Well, I got baptized. That's not what I asked. When did you get saved? You get saved by receiving Christ as Savior. But these folks didn't count their salvation professions of faith. They counted them when they followed the Lord in believers' baptism. Those are the ones they said they really got it. They really knew what they were doing. So they counted them that way. He moved to Virginia and labored with John Waller. Remember him, Swearing Jack Waller? We studied him a couple weeks ago. a rough-living, cussing, gambling guy that got saved. Well, after he got saved, he preached here, and John Leland preached with him. And several years later, John Leland was ordained by John Waller, who was an ordained Baptist minister, in 1787. John Leland then, in 15 years in Virginia, preached 3,009. He kept track of details. Again, showing his lawyer desires or that intellectual side. He kept track of everything. You can go online and read more about him, and you'll see statistics he kept in his life of everything he did. In 15 years in Virginia, he preached 3,009 sermons, baptized 700 people, and formed two churches. He was a staunch enemy of slavery. Baptists, you can be proud of your heritage, because our forefathers believed that all men were created equal before Abraham Lincoln ever said that. They believed that slavery was wrong when it was popular. A lot of folks want to say, well, you know, the religious South. Well, the Baptists were against slavery, and their leaders wrote pamphlets against it back in that day. He was a staunch enemy of slavery and promoted the principles of religious liberty. John Leland is hailed, even in the secular world, he's hailed as a hero because of his promotion of religious liberty. He saw the abuses of the Congregational Church in Massachusetts. He saw the abuses of the Episcopal Church in Virginia and how they excluded people and everything if they weren't of their persuasion. And even persecuted those of others. And he was a staunch promoter of religious liberty. His influence and involvement with James Madison led to Madison's election to Congress and the Bill of Rights. Again, I didn't have time to write more in. I'm limited in space. But John Leland was so popular among the Baptists and the people that James Madison came to him and asked for his support. And he said, no, I'll not give you my support. I'm going to run for Congress against you because I believe that the Constitution is not giving religious freedom the way it should be promised. So Madison said to Leland, he said, if I can guarantee you that we will write a Bill of Rights and that the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights will guarantee the freedom of religion, will you support me? And Leland said, if you'll write that in, if you'll promise me you'll write that in, I will support you for Congress. And James Madison got voted in because of Leland's support and all the Baptists that were behind him. And of course, Madison fulfilled his obligation, and he wrote those 10 amendments, and the first one was that the government shall make no restriction, I don't remember the exact words, concerning the practice of religion. And so that all happened. John Leland was in the background of that. And again, that's not just a Baptist opinion, that's in secular histories that he did that. He left Virginia in 1791, and after some time in Connecticut, returned to Massachusetts. In 1801, he took an infamous journey to see President Thomas Jefferson in Washington. Again, you have to read this. He lived in Cheshire, Massachusetts, and Cheshire, Massachusetts was famous for its cheese. And they made a mammoth piece of cheese, and Leland escorted that piece of cheese by train from Cheshire, Massachusetts, to Washington, D.C. He became known as the Mammoth Priest because of the mammoth piece of cheese that he was taking. The newspapers covered the big journey as they stopped at places. He preached everywhere along the line, but it was a big deal and that he was taking. And the people of Cheshire, because they liked Thomas Jefferson and appreciated his politics, made that big piece of cheese and wanted to give it as a gift to him. So he, being from that town, is the one that took it there. And when he arrived in Washington, D.C., he preached to the House of Representatives. I'd like to look up now and see when was the last time, this might have been it, the last time a Baptist preacher preached to the House of Representatives. But he preached there with Thomas Jefferson in attendance. Near the end of his life, Leland himself gave the following statistics. And these are just a little bit. Again, if you look him up online, you'll find all kinds of. The number of sermons I have preached is not far from 8,000. The number of persons who I have baptized is 1,278. He kept track of those things. All right? He died during the night of January 14th, 1841. So John Leland is a very popular name in secular history of our nation. Again, Because of him, James Madison wrote the First Amendment and put it in there. And that's because of a Baptist preacher. All right, secondly, Adoniram Judson, a name that you probably recognize, maybe more than John Leland. Adoniram Judson is known as the first American missionary, the first Baptist missionary. But he wasn't always Baptist, as all these other fellows. He was born August 9th in 1788 in Malden, Massachusetts, as the oldest son of a Congregationalist minister. Notice they all seem to come from that line. At age 3, he was able to read the Bible. And at age 16, he joined the sophomore class at Brown University. After rejecting the religious teachings of his youth, he was brought under great conviction at the passing of one of his irreligious friends. Again, this story, which I didn't have time to record, is an amazing story. When he was at Brown University, he was an atheist. He turned against the religion of his father and the teachings. He was a wicked young man, and he had a friend, Eckert or something like Eckert was his name. He had a young friend who was a wild partier, violent, atheistic guy, and he hung around him all the time. Well, one night he was in a boarding house, and he's sleeping in the room in that boarding house, and someone in the room next to him was dying. And he could hear his wails during the night, and he's crying out in horror. And it scared Adoniram Judson to death. He went down the next morning to talk about that, only to find out it was that friend, that best friend who had taught him to be godless and to deny everything he'd been taught when he grew up. It was that friend that he had heard in the room next to him, not knowing it, that had seen hell in its fury and was screaming out as he died. The question of where that friend would spend eternity brought Judson to faith in Christ on May 28th, 1809. After hearing a sermon on the subject of missions, he sought to serve the Lord in that capacity. On February 19th, 1812, he and his wife Anne, whom he married February 5th, so they've been married 14 days, and they sailed to India. That basically was their honeymoon. They sailed for Burma, they went to India and then on to Burma. Though they left the United States as missionaries for the Congregational Church, he was not yet a Baptist. Judson's study of the Scriptures during the voyage brought him to adopt the views of the Baptist. And what was it he was studying? He was studying the doctrine of baptism. He was convinced that infant baptism was wrong, it was a heresy. And he was convinced that as a now saved person, he needed to be rebaptized, so to speak. Not really rebaptized because the first baptism didn't count as anything. But he decided he needed to be baptized because he found the Bible taught believer's baptism, not infant baptism. Again, this is what differentiates a Baptist from the mainline denominations, the Protestant, the Lutheran, the Methodist, all those who will baptize infants. All right? And he and his wife were baptized by immersion on September 6th, 1812. They were baptized by a English Baptist missionary that was over there, and he baptized them. So they were baptized by a Baptist missionary. There in Burma, it took 6 years before they had their first convert, and 2 more 4 months later. For the first 6 years in Burma, they studied the language 12 hours a day. The language was not even written. Adoniram Judson is the one that ended up making the syllabus, the dictionary in the Burmese language that people use to this day that go over there. Of course, you know, Burma now is called Myanmar, and we have one of our missionaries that's over there now. We'll talk about that more in a minute. But even people today, when they want to learn that language, they go back to what Judson translated way back then. It was so good in what he did. It took 6 years to learn the language. Exactly. In fact, I read this. A modern-day president or dictator or whatever in Myanmar, when they came to him and said they needed a new translation of the Bible, he said, the one we have that Judson did is so perfect and exact and explains our language so well, you could never make an improvement on it. So that Bible he translated way back then is still the one they use today. After 12 years, their church numbered 18. Can you imagine 12 years of labor and the church runs 18 people? Some folks would say, well, he's a failure. Well, it didn't end after 12 months or 12 years. Judson's wife, Anne, died in 1826. And after marrying again to Sarah Boardman, the widow of a fellow missionary, in 1834, his second wife died in 1845. He also buried two children in Burma. He also lost his first one on the boat on the way to Burma. So he lost three children, sacrificed three children, lost three wives. We've read two so far. He also buried two children while in Burma. In all, Judson spent 37 years in Burma, minus 10 months on furlough after his first 33 years. He stayed in Burma for 33 years. When he first got to Burma, he decided to wear a yellow, you know, the white, I don't, it's not a robe, but whatever they call them over there, that designated a religious teacher. He wore the yellow, big flowing, you know, things that he didn't dress American, he dressed like them. And he wore the yellow one. Well, after a little while, he ditched the yellow one because that's what all the Buddhist priests wore, and he got a white one for the righteousness of Christ. After a while in that, he realized that whether he wore that or American clothes, he was a foreigner either way, so he ditched that too and just went back to dressing like everybody else does. He was also imprisoned for 21 months as a spy during the English-Burmese War, where he suffered horribly. Again, if you look up Adoniram Judson online and read about this part of his life, 20 months in prison. And we're talking about the worst of prisons over there. They came in front of his wife when this war broke out between England and Burma. And the Burmese disliked any foreigners coming in, including Adoniram Judson. They took him in the presence of his wife and they bound him in a torture position. And they took him and put him in that prison. And I read, they had his feet tied up high and he was hanging down where only his neck and shoulders were touching the ground. And he was held in that position for very long, long periods of time. His first wife, Anne, was alive then, and she was doing everything she could, visiting him every day, bringing him food, going to the government officials and pleading with them to let him go. But he spent 20 months in those prisons during that time. Only the grace of God spared him from the pronounced death sentence. It is recorded that after 20 years in India, okay, after 12... he had 18 people. 8 years later, after 20 years in India, over 1,000 souls had come to Christ. The message is, don't quit early. Just keep going. And by the end of his life, the number was 210,000 with 26 churches he had started. I read another thing that said that he was responsible for 100 churches. Now that might be the people he led to Christ that started churches. That's different from the 26. He died on a voyage to the Isle of France. He was told to take a journey. His third wife, and again, I'm skipping through this. The third wife that he. He died on a voyage to the Isle of France and was buried at sea on April 12, 1850. Adoniram Judson is credited with being the first American Baptist missionary. It took him 24 years to translate the Bible into Burmese. 24 years. And again, it's the one they use to this day. You know, this is an interesting statistic, and I'm getting this online, so you never know for sure. But they say that Myanmar today is the third largest Baptist country. Has the country with the third largest Baptist population in the world. And you know that's got to be a result of his ministry almost 200 years ago. But that makes it, what are the two that are before it? Well, we know what number one is, right? Us, USA, USA. What's the second largest Baptist population country in the world? I'll let you think for a minute. It's India. That kind of surprised me. India is the second largest. Well, maybe that's not so surprising. Look on the back of your page. Two English Baptists. Before we go, there's more others. We could have John Bunyan, I didn't do, and that would the guy that wrote Pilgrim's Progress, and that'd be a wonderful study. But two English Baptists, two that are prominent, that names, these are all names, folks, that we should know. And I encourage you again, type these guys in online. Be careful what you read. John Leland, I think it's PBS or somebody, some secular group, because he was successful in the secular realm. When you read that, you're going to get a skewed story about it. They're not going to emphasize his religious side. So you're going to get some information that's crazy, but search it. And the majority of sources you find that agree with each other. But William Carey was born August 17th in 1761 in Palmerston, England. At the age of 14, he began working as an apprentice to a shoemaker and was led to Christ by a fellow worker at age 17 and baptized on October 5th, 1783 at the age of 22 by the Baptist preacher J.R. Ryland. After pastoring two churches from 1786 to 1792, he felt the call to missions and arrived in India in November 1793, along with his reluctant wife, Dorothy. She was not all for giving up England and going to India. By the way, the missionary that baptized Adoniram Judson over in India before he went to Burma was one of William Carey's fellow missionaries. It wasn't William Carey, but it was one of his fellow Baptist missionaries. His wife Dorothy was reluctant, whom he married in 1781, and their four young children. Carey was shocked by the heathenism of the people, which included throwing babies into the Ganges River in worship to false gods and the burning of widows. Back in India at that time, if a man died, they burned his wife. She had no value. Her husband was gone. Her head's gone. So that's what they did. They call that Siti. It's spelled a couple different ways. I put S-U-T-T-E-E. I've seen S-I-T-E. It was called Siti and was successfully outlawed in 1829 due to William Carey's influence. When a missionary goes to a foreign country, it's not just religion that they help with. They help the education of the people. Many times they help the physical health of the people. They help the nation. Missionaries are underappreciated in the countries they go to. Carey labored for 7 years before seeing his first Indian convert, whose name was Krishna Pal, and he was baptized by Carey on December 28th of 1800. During his 41 years in India, without ever returning to England, Carey lost two wives. His first wife died in 1807. His second wife, Charlotte Rumor, whom he married in 1808, died in 1821. I remember it, one was scarlet fever and the other, both of them died from illnesses due to the country they were in. And a son, Peter, age 5. Carey translated the Bible into 34 different tongues while in India. India doesn't just have one language. They've got many, many different languages, and he translated them into 34 different languages. He is known as the father of modern missions. He died on June 9th. He was over in India before Adoniram Judson sailed over to India and then down into Burma. During his 41 years in India without ever returning, okay, he lost his two wives. Carey translated the Bible into 34 different tongues while in India, and is known as the father of modern missions. He died on June 9th, 1934. And his third wife, Grace Hughes, whom he married in 1823, died 1 year later. Both of these missionaries were married three times, one after the other. What a rough life they lived. What sacrifices they make, even giving up children. We've said this again, if we wanted to declare independence from a country like they did in 1776, I don't know that we have the backbone in our people today to do that. To make the sacrifices that were made. We talked about that in Baptist church history. And even in missions work, do we have those that would make those sacrifices, bearing wives on the mission field and children for the service of God? Most people today would say they were nuts. Even church people would say they didn't have to do that. But the great fruit that remains is because of their sacrifices. Then lastly, Charles Haddon Spurgeon, you've probably heard of, the Prince of Preachers. He was born on June 19th, 1834. He was converted to Christ on January 6, 1850, at the age of 15. He attended a meeting. It was raining, and so he went into this little meeting of separatist Baptists. He didn't even know what was going on. And as he went into that meeting, the preacher was preaching, and he was pointing his finger. And Charles Haddon Spurgeon said he was pointing at me the whole time. He wasn't, but he thought he was. And that night he was converted. He was baptized that May, and at the age of 19, he was called to pastor the New Park Street Chapel, where he would remain for 38 years. The congregation quickly outgrew its building, and while the new one, the Metropolitan Tabernacle, was being built, he preached in both Exeter Hall and Surrey Music Hall to crowds of 10,000 people. The Metropolitan Tabernacle is there in London, England, and we had the privilege of walking through it when we were over there and standing behind the pulpit where Charles Haddon Spurgeon preached, although it's not exactly the same pulpit. That church in World War II had a bomb come right through the roof into the middle of it and destroyed a lot of the church, so they've rebuilt it and remade it and reorganized some things, but it's still the Metropolitan Tabernacle, and they've got a big museum in there dedicated to Spurgeon. He preached up to 10,000 people. On October 17, 1857, he preached to 23,654 at the Crystal Palace in London. What, the media was so against him? Does that sound familiar? They didn't like his preaching. They would write caricatures in the London paper, making fun of his stature, making fun of his appearance. They even had someone went to one of these halls when he's preaching, when there's 10,000 people, and in the back of that hall, they yelled out fire. There was no fire. But they yelled out fire and caused a stampede in which many were killed. And the media used that to say that these preaching meetings should not take place because they're dangerous to the people. And it later turned out and found out that someone had been planted in the audience to do that. Be careful what you see and hear and believe. Because that was a setup all the way along. And that was in the 1800s. Though popular among the people, he was a constant target of the press. Well, I skipped something. October 7th, he preached his 23,000. The tabernacle was completed in 1861 and would seat 6,000. He preached there 10 times a week. 10 times a week. People filled it every time he preached, every day of the week. Though popular among the people, he was a constant target of the press. He married Susanna Thompson on January 8th, 1856, and they had two twin sons. One thing you might know about Spurgeon, and this is just a side note, he smoked cigars. And that's one thing that people today, some folks that want to smoke a cigar will say, well, Spurgeon did. And the thing that got him to quit was when the cigar company came to him and wanted him to be their spokesman. Wanted to put his picture on their cigar boxes to advertise. And he said, as a Baptist preacher, I have no business with my face being on a cigar box. And that's when he quit smoking cigars. Just a side note. Spurgeon is referred to as the Prince of Preachers. And his sermons and books are still widely available. I've got 3 volumes back there of Spurgeon on the Psalms. And they're one of the best commentaries on the Psalms you can get. He's got commentaries all the way through the Bible. I know they're down in our library. He died on January 31st, 1892 at the age of 57. His son Thomas succeeded him as pastor of the Metropolitan Tabernacle. We have a rich heritage. I don't like using the word, but I'm going to. We have a proud heritage. We don't ever have to be ashamed of being Baptist. Now, I'm not, you know, Brother Gary and Brother Gary, I know you've heard this. I'm a Baptist through and through. I'm not. I'm a Christian. I'm saved. As they say, if you weren't a Baptist, what you'd be? I'd be ashamed. All right, that's the big boot camp drill for Baptist preachers and all that. And that's just a little bit over the top. That's a little bit of nonsense. But we do have every reason to be proud of the heritage and where we come from. And I believe in our day we need to know that, so we stick to it. We stick to the doctrines, the B-A-P-T-I-S-T-S. We stick to those doctrines because people around us that aren't Baptist, that's the reason they're not. Because they're compromising on those different doctrines. They're not taking a stand on those different things. And so there's a difference between Baptist and not Baptist. And if it's not Baptist in its name, we hear this all the time. It's not Baptist in name, but it's Baptist in practice. I doubt it. I highly doubt it. Because if you sit down long enough and quiz them long enough, you'll probably find out they're not. A lot of Bible churches say we're Baptistic. Well, Baptistic is not Baptist. And the reason they're not Baptist is because there's something in their doctrinal practice that differs from that. And I've looked that up, and it's true every time. So we can be proud of where we came from. Again, not that we think we're better than the others. I've told you, my favorite preacher of all time, better turn the mic off, is a Methodist preacher, George Whitefield. He came to America in the Great Awakening and preached and had so many converts, and we saw that with Schubel Stearns and all those other ones. He had so many converts that became Baptists. And he said, my chickens are becoming ducks. Because a duck would float and duck its head under the water.